This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Okay, we're going to talk now about what might be a self-fulfilling prophecy on American college campuses. You've heard about it. People are talking about the slow death of the humanities. To illustrate why, we thought we'd have a little fun and turn to Monty Python.
Bring out your dead! Bring out your dead!
Here's one!
So this scene, of course, from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where the plague has ravaged a village and families bring out their dead and pile the bodies onto a cart. The thing is, residents are getting so used to death that they've started bringing out people who aren't quite dead yet.
I'm not dead.
What? Nothing. Here's your ninepence.
I'm not dead.
Yeah. He says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not.
He isn't?
Well, he will be soon. He's very ill.
I'm getting better.
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment.
Oh, I can't.
Okay. And on it goes until the Undertaker basically clubs the man in the head and dumps him in the cart, and he thinks, why not? He'll probably be dead anyway.
And so, what does all this have to do with higher ed and the humanities?
Beyond our admittedly questionable use of medieval history, that is.
Well, with the rise of the 21st century knowledge economy, many politicians and so-called experts have been saying something similar about humanities education. They say all the best jobs in the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math, and encourage students not to major in the humanities.
So, there's a kind of plague spreading in humanities departments everywhere, at least according to popular media reports. With fewer and fewer English and literature majors, people are getting ready to declare the humanities dead or dying, even though, of course, it's far from dead yet.
Which brings us to writer Ben Winterhalter, who wrote recently in The Atlantic that the crisis in the humanities is actually a self-fulfilling prophecy, a kind of inevitable feedback loop created, he says, by stressing out over economic outcomes. The problem, he writes, isn't the humanities or their relevance in today's economy. It's our preoccupation with quantifiable economic factors in the first place.
And joining us now to parse through all of this is Ben Winterhalter. His Atlantic piece is titled The Morbid Fascination with the Death of the Humanities. Ben, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much for having me.
And do forgive us for using the pythons there, but we couldn't resist because it seemed to illustrate the point rather well to us. But first of all, let me just ask you, I mean, your piece is called The Morbid Fascination with the Death of the Humanities. So does that mean that you think that the humanities aren't quite dead yet?
I certainly think they're not quite dead yet. I think that I should note that my original title of the piece was The Long View, and the sort of magazine editing process always involves slight changes to the titles.
Right. Attention-grabbing changes.
But I do think the humanities aren't dead yet. I think that interest in the humanities among scholars, among young people, is as deep as it's ever been. But I think that the change in the discourse is a change in the direction of worry, in the direction of anxiety, and in the direction of concern over immediate economic results rather than over the humanities for what they really are.
And yet people do seem to be talking quite honestly and straightforwardly about a crisis in humanities departments across American college campuses, because there has been this steady drumbeat over time for the past several years from politicians, from people in the science and tech field, that if you want a good-paying job when you graduate from college, that going into the STEM fields is the way to go. And so, it seems like we are seeing sort of a slow reduction in people who do choose pure humanities majors.
Right. And what I meant to suggest is that this trend is a result of the initial choice to have a conversation about whether you get better economic results with a STEM degree. I cited some studies by the National Center for Education Statistics that suggest that over time, if you major in a STEM field, you'll end up, you know, making more money, having better career prospects, and that this ignores some longer view cultural benefits that the humanities can provide. I think it's often easy to miss things that occur on a longer time scale, and it's easy to miss things that occur At a sort of subtler cultural level.
Right. And you also say in your piece that the very people demanding to know why English and art history departments aren't doing very well are often the people who help drive students away from those departments to begin with. I mean, that's the sort of self-fulfilling prophecy part I'd like to get to with you. So tell us a little bit more about that.
I think the core idea is that We have a sort of national discourse that urges people to consider studying a STEM field. Parents talk to kids. They talk about they're worried about I'm worried about your future. I'm worried about what's going to happen with you. Is it really wise to study art history? Is it really wise to study music? And I think that that has an effect on what students actually go on to study. Which in turn ends up sort of decreasing enrollment in the humanities, which leads further to questioning about, well, are the humanities succeeding? Are they striving? On, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So what I find very provocative about your piece here is that it seems like you're getting at something deeper. And forgive me if I'm misinterpreting this, or correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems as if you're questioning the very basis of this new national discourse that we're having.
Yeah, I am. I think what I'm saying is that there's something more fundamental to talk about, and there's something more fundamental to consider about what the humanities really have to offer our society over a longer time horizon and sort of in a more fundamental way in terms of who we are and what we want to be.
Listeners, I'm speaking with Ben Winterhalter. He is author of a piece in The Atlantic magazine titled The Morbid Fascination with the Death of the Humanities. And I'm wondering what you think about it. Do you think that there is a crisis in humanities departments on college campuses in the greater Boston area across the country? Did you choose to major in the humanities? Did you think it was the right decision? Or did you listen to all those people from President Obama to Governor Patrick to maybe your very own teachers in school telling you that STEM jobs were the way to go? And what do you think about Ben Winterhalter's fundamental point here, that maybe we as a culture are focusing on the wrong things, focusing on the quantifiable when it comes to what's worth studying in college, when there's something maybe more and deeper that we should be looking at when we assess the value of higher education? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can send us a tweet if that's more your thing, and we're at Radio Boston. So, Ben, can you stand by for just a minute? Because I want to bring in some other voices who've been thinking a lot about this. One is John Tessitore. He's program director at the American Academy of Arts and Sciences and lead staffer at their Commission on the Humanities and Social Sciences. John Tessitore, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us from Washington today is Jonathan Rothwell. He's an associate fellow at the Brookings Institution's Metropolitan Policy Program. He's looked a lot at jobs and economic possibilities for students who do major in science, technology, engineering, and math. Jonathan Rothwell, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So let me start with you first, Jonathan Rothwell. What do you make of what Ben Winterhalter is saying, that basically we as a culture are too focused on the quantifiable when it comes to recommending students to go into the STEM fields, entering college?
Well, I really enjoyed his article, actually, and I'm guilty, in his view, of being one of the people who encourage people to study in STEM fields. And the reasons I do so, I won't spend a lot of time on this, is number one, you're more likely to find a job and a high-paying job, as he acknowledges and as have you said. But also there are some important public goods for people to major in STEM fields. I think this is why it's so exciting for politicians to talk about. If you just look at the people who come up with breakthrough technologies, whether it be patents or the startup technologies for new companies, that are disproportionately in STEM fields. You can go down even the list of, say, the top valued NASDAQ companies. You'll see many of the founders were STEM majors. So there's this really important aspect to this body of knowledge that is essential for driving innovation, economic growth, and ultimately living standards. But aside from that, I fundamentally agree with Ben that there's huge value beyond those sort of practical benefits to the moral, philosophical foundations that one can really only get through the humanities. And that's setting aside the actual skills that people get in terms of writing and critical thinking.
Okay, so we're going to get to that, those moral and philosophical values in a moment. But I do want to just push you a little here, because Ben in his piece writes that it is painfully short-sighted to decide the value of art or literature or history solely in terms of today's economic needs. What's your response to that?
Well, I mean, it's maybe true, but people have to decide. You have to have some basis for deciding what they're going to major in. And I think it's certainly legitimate to consider one's prospects for earning a high salary and finding a job in a career field they find satisfying. And it just so happens you're more likely to do that. Roughly 50% of computer science majors end up working as a computer occupation. Many more end up working in related fields. But if you study English, you know, roughly 7% maybe end up post-secondary English teacher. Another roughly, you know, 7-8% end up in a writing or editing field. So even within that, even if your career goal is to be a writer, it's not, you know, necessarily the case that you're going to get there by majoring in English.
Well, John Tessitore, let me bring you in here, and then let me argue the other side of the point here. And that is that you, as much as anyone, know that the economic realities for students today are very, very real. First of all, just the cost of putting themselves through college, whether it be through working or loans, et cetera, is something that they're going to have to bear upon graduation. And second of all, the idea that maybe 4 years of studying computer science or biology might actually set them up for greater economic success in the future, you can't blame them for following that advice.
Absolutely not. So the Humanities Commission launched its report last year, The Heart of the Matter. It's about a year now. Thursday will be our anniversary for 1 year on the stump. We have never suggested that majors was the way to actually measure this debate. The idea that major is the be-all and end-all of this kind of conversation has to do with the fact that we can count them. Mm-hmm. Setting aside the fact that the national averages aren't really declining in any major way, to use the same phrase, the idea of the commission and the idea I think that we need to focus our attention on is that we need resources to teach students how to think in different ways, whether they major in the biological sciences, the physical sciences, whether they major in business. What our commission has been doing for the last year is advocating resources so that students have have access to ways of looking at the world, ways of thinking about themselves in a global economy.
But it's these very resources, though, that seem to be, and I know it varies from campus to campus, but seem to be increasingly moving away from the humanities and perhaps towards more of the STEM field.
So and there's no way to compete, right? STEM fields, when you look at resources needed for STEM education versus resources needed for humanities education, it will always be an enormous disparity. Science is not a cheap enterprise. But what we're looking at now nationally is the rise of second majors. Just if you take four-year colleges as an example, the rise of second majors and course taking on its own, mm-hmm. that science majors and people in the STEM fields actually love to take philosophy. Actually love to take English, actually love to take history.
Well, Ben Winterhalter, let me turn back to you, because you write about, you know, a couple of people that you met that are examples of exactly this.
Right. You know, the article that I wrote is sort of part of a larger piece of writing that was intended to provide some discussion of what humanists are doing, of what scientists are doing, of what mathematicians are doing, and some of the areas where they kind of blend together. And I spoke, for example, about the work of a scholar named Matt Langione, who uses neuroscience to study literature. And I think that might be a good example of what John is talking about. Majors are becoming more and more interdisciplinary, and scholarship at the graduate level especially.
So I think is
changing.
So yeah. Breaking down the silos, regardless of if you're in the humanities or the STEM fields, essentially. Well, we've got a lot of callers who want to join us on this topic. Let's turn to them. Nick is calling from Brighton. You're on the air, Nick.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's your thought today?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting that we talk about the economic possibilities of STEM, but we sort of seem to ignore the fact that the cultural and humanities, have been an economic power for us. Even when our exports seem to slow, we're still exporting music, art, literature, and film throughout the world, and there are people clamoring for these things. And yet, as a culture, we don't seem to push for increasing that as a part of our economy.
Well, Nick, let me pick it up from you there, because you make a really interesting point. I actually want to turn it to Jonathan Rothwell first in Washington at Brookings. What about all, basically, you know, it's in at times in past it's been called that soft power that comes from all that cultural capital that comes from folks who are stars in the humanities?
Well, the caller is absolutely right that we do export and we enjoy a trade surplus in film production and recording industries and so on. So there is some practical value there. There's no doubt about it. It just so happens that the more traditional STEM heavy and not so traditional new tech industries that are STEM heavy are driving most of our exports and innovation. So there's value to both, but I mean the bulk of economic production and exporting innovation is coming from the more engineering computer science oriented industries.
John Tessitore, your thoughts on that?
It reminds me that we're dealing with a word, the humanities, that is largely a college word. It's a word of higher education, and in fact we're talking about disciplines, fields, ways of thinking that are relevant from kindergarten through the rest of your life. And so when we talk about the humanities and their economic value, it's almost as if we're talking only in terms of your undergraduate degree, let alone graduate research. That doesn't ever seem to come up in these conversations. But you're only talking about your undergraduate degree rather than the kind of structure of knowledge that we need preschool through retirement and beyond. That's actually underpinning a lot of what we do on a daily basis that we don't recognize as humanities.
Let's take another call. Marilyn is calling from Wellesley. You're on the air, Marilyn.
Hi. I really want to pick up on the point that was just made. I teach in the English department at Wellesley College. And one thing I've been alerted to is this very recently Forbes came out with a series of articles and a link to all these articles that about that in the long run actually humanities pays more because people tend to do what they like, get knowledge, as the person was just saying, they go on to get postgraduate degrees and they stay in those jobs for a lot longer and there's not that much turnover, so they actually end up making more money. So you might not get the hit right out. And also, I think that the interdisciplinary thing is great. Like, we have our commencement speaker was Sue Wagner, who was an English and economics major and was one of the founders of BlackRock, a big financial institution. And the speech was great. It was mostly that she kept talking about her communication skills.
Right. Well, Marilyn, thank you so much for your call. Ben Winterhalter, let me turn that to you, because in our research that we were looking through today, it does seem as if the data are actually unclear in terms of where the jobs are, who's the most successful. I mean, you can sort of pick fields and parse through them. But what do you make of Marilyn's story there or idea that if you basically study what you love, and if what you love are the humanities, as we're calling them generally, that you'd probably be better off in the long run?
I suspect that's exactly right. And it's sort of what I'm saying, which is that The idea is that our cultural discourse has made it more difficult to study what you love, and that is because we've become so concerned about what will I get in the short term. It's a sort of myopic focus on immediate economic results at the expense of engagement, at the expense of passion, and at the expense of getting to focus on what you truly enjoy and what truly drives you forward.
Okay, but let me just push back on that gently, because on the other hand, there does seem to be irrefutable evidence, though, that when it comes to job growth by sector, I mean, we've been seeing, we're told we're seeing double-digit job growth in health, in science, in engineering, and we're not seeing double-digit job growth in things that that the, you know, that, that a pure humanities major, again, and I know I'm simplifying this, but a humanities major might be qualified for right out of college.
I don't disagree with that. I suspect that the facts are what they are. I think my point is more about sort of choices at the individual level and pressures on students and the degrees of freedom that they feel to make selections. If someone is interested in science, if they're interested in mathematics, more power to them.
Mm. Well, we've got some tweets here coming in. Travis Alford, or Alford, sent us this tweet saying, financial success does not necessarily equal personal or job satisfaction. I'll take real fulfillment over monetary riches. And Donna Love sent us this tweet. She said, Steve Jobs studied calligraphy in college. I think he'd actually dropped out of college by then, but in college, and counted it as a great influence on what he did at Apple. And that's the story that comes from his famous Stanford University commencement speech. But John Tessitore, let me actually turn to you with that Steve Jobs example in mind, because yes, he took a calligraphy class and he decided to create fonts for computers, but he didn't major in calligraphy. It was a class. It was an elective. So are we talking about, you know, humanities as electives to infuse STEM majors, or are we getting back to more sort of that breaking down the silos and bringing together fields?
God, I hope it's the latter, because nobody wants to subordinate disciplines. That's the anecdote that keeps giving too. I mean, the Steve Jobs anecdote just is the great tech anecdote, right? Of how arts and humanities feed the tech world. But one thing to remember, and I hesitate to do this because I don't want to make it about Jobs either, or Steve Jobs either. But one of the things that we know is that people today, working today, can expect to have five different careers over the course of their lives. And job flexibility is something that cannot be taught job to job. You need the skills when you start to be able to move from career to career. And there's a way in which, and this was something that when we got a call from Congress to create our commission, there was a way in which people noticed that having the skills of the humanities and the sciences together would provide you with flexibility through the course of your life. It's a different kind of argument, but it's one that even the Congress was taking seriously when they called on us.
I can imagine there are a lot of families and students in particular maybe who are going to be starting their freshman year in a couple weeks, if not months, who are now thinking, well, what am I supposed to do? Jonathan Rothwell, a last thought goes to you briefly. We've just got a couple seconds to go. On that note, what would you recommend students who are entering their freshman year do in 6 to 8 weeks?
Well, I think Ben's point is largely right, that you know, you have to consider what you're good at, what you're passionate about, and you know, even if you could make more as a mediocre engineer than you could as a first-rate writer, you know, you may ultimately get more out of your career as a first-rate writer, and you know, ultimately the difference in earnings might not be that huge. It turns out the STEM majors can earn something between $500,000 to, you know, $1.5 million more over the course of their lifetimes, but you know, as people age, the humanities majors catch up a little bit with the STEM majors, and they gravitate towards managerial occupations and higher paying careers. So, you know, ultimately, you know, if you're doing what you're passionate about and something that you're good at, you'll probably do okay if you go to college.
Although I'm at the stage in my life where $1 million sounds like a lot even over a lifetime, and I did it backwards. I got a couple engineering degrees and ended up in journalism. So who knows? Follow your passions, ladies and gentlemen. Jonathan Rothwell is an associate fellow at the Brookings Institution. He joined us today from Washington. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And John Tessitore, Program Director at the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. Pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And Ben Winterhalter, author of an Atlantic article entitled The Morbid Fascination with the Death of the Humanities. Thank you so much for provoking this conversation.
Thank you.
And listeners, keep your comments about the humanities and the future of the humanities coming to us. Go to our website, radioboston.org. There's more of the show coming up in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.